Dave, you can relate to this. You know how if you get to know athletes, you get to know players on certain teams personally, you root for them. You, sure. you feel for them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about our man in Ukraine, Joseph Linsley. So yesterday, I'm seeing these news stories about explosions rocking the Ukraine nuclear plant, and there are concerns that this could unleash a catastrophe. I'm thinking about Joseph and hoping everything's okay over there. Joe, greetings. How are you?
Bob, greetings. Great to speak with you again. I hope you you had a great time away, and I appreciate that concern. I mean, I've spoken with you all from that city called Nikopol, right across from the nuclear plant, the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, which is the largest in Europe. And, you know, I mean, obviously we know the history of the Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine. Chernobyl continued to function even after that disaster, and it continued to provide energy. But Zaporizhia, which is in the south of the country, Chernobyl's in the north, has been a safe and successful plant, but the Russians have occupied it for months, and have been the Ukrainian scientists who staff the place have been held hostage there, and these are professionals. They're trying to keep it safe, but now there seems to be indications that the Russians are trying to break the infrastructure of the nuclear plant to cut off permanently cut off power supply. And I just heard last night from a friend in Nikopol, in that city, right across from the plant. And I mean, it was like a message of desperation. She said, can you please tell Americans about the situation? Next time, this could be the biggest nuclear catastrophe in Europe after Chernobyl. If you could speak about it and raise this issue, it would be great. A lot of lives are at stake. It's really scary what they do. And she was writing this to me as her city is getting shelled by the Russians from across the river.
Hmm. Ukraine and Russia accused each other of shelling the nuclear power plant, and I'm sure that's more Russian propaganda, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in fact, it's a strategic move for the Russians to occupy that nuclear plant because Ukrainians will not fire on it because they know what kind of disaster that could cause. You know, this was a country that suffered through Chernobyl was an accident created by, you know, Soviet neglect from Moscow. So the Ukrainians do not want a disaster on their territory. And this is part of the sort of very sneaky Russian propaganda, which is powerful. And I'm still speaking to you from the mountains here of Western Ukraine. I've had many friends come up to visit. People want to get a break. And the biggest topic of conversation has been this power of Russian propaganda. Last week, I don't know if you saw, Bob, but the Amnesty International released a report saying Ukrainian fighting tactics are endangering civilians. And it's this preposterous report that claims that Ukraine, and not Russia, has put civilians in harm's way. And Amnesty actually recommended that Ukraine not keep soldiers in its cities, instead have the soldiers far away from the cities, which is exactly what Russia would want, because the cities are the things that Russia's been trying to occupy and take over. You know, the Ukrainians had no choice but to defend their cities. And it's the same. Russia is trying to, you know, erode this idea that Ukraine is somehow, you know, is a just cause, you know, to defend Ukraine. And when you hear that, you might think it's not possible. But as this war drags on, and, you know, it's been very slow progress for the Russians on the ground for weeks. And, you know, people start to get bored about it. And then they start to hear these little, you know, little bits of information questioning what's happening. And I think this is the Kremlin's long-term chess playing strategy. Bob, sadly, I've even spoken with friends in America who are starting to believe some of these things, some of the Russian propaganda.
That's sad. On a happier note, Joseph, you and your colleagues will be glad to hear this. Hundreds of women dressed in white stood hand in hand, taped placed across their mouths to show solidarity for Ukraine here in Chicago. They were marching from Water Tower Place to Millennium Park yesterday, and they didn't speak, but their message was clear. And a little later, one of the organizers, someone who immigrated from Ukraine, said the protest is asking American people, asking the government, asking President Biden to designate Russia as a terrorist state. And so they're keeping the story in front of people. And most of the folks involved in this in Chicago have a friend or relatives in Ukraine. And one of them said every single day it's very hard to get sleep because you want to make sure your loved one is awake tomorrow. My friend is not alive anymore, but I'm so proud because he died for the freedom of Ukraine. So here in Chicago, we're not forgetting you and the people there, Joseph.
And speaking of Chicago, I was just speaking with my friends, Taras and Svetlana. They edit local media in Lviv. And last week in their newsroom, they hosted Archbishop Benedict, who is a Ukrainian Greek Catholic leader of Chicago. And he came here last week to be in solidarity with the Ukrainian people. So he said, we talk about the suffering in the war, but the war has also been a miracle, because I think everyone thought that Ukraine was going to lose. You know, and Russia thought Ukraine was going to fall so quickly. And so amid all the pain and suffering, you know, there's so many stories of heroism. And he said there's a lot of miracles happening in this war. And that came from a fellow Chicagoan.
That's good to hear. Also good to hear the fact that some food supplies are getting through. Ships loaded with crops got the okay to leave Ukraine, didn't they?
Yeah, they've been able to sail through the Black Sea. There's a ship, I think it's already arrived in Lebanon. There's another one on the way to Ireland. And we really see, you know, how central Ukraine has been to the global food supply. But the important thing to look at with the Russian propaganda, it was not Russian humanitarian desires that allowed this to happen. It was Turkey and some African countries who are, you know, Russia's kind of only friends left, really, who said, we need this grain. So they pressured Russia into doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, almost 7,000 tons of sunflower oil that the world needs. Well, hopefully we'll be able to hit on some lighter topics tomorrow, Joseph. For example, your stay at Chuck Norris's house where he didn't feed you. that'll be a little more fun to discuss with you.
I will be ready.
In the meantime, be safe and thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Welcome back.
Thanks.